Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics World. That is Post covering finance and property news. Well, as we run up to Christmas, it's another Monday evening and everyone is back for another rant. Hi, Edwin, how are you going?
I'm doing well, Martin. I am doing well. And our Premier is kicking some goals, according to some, about to go into a death spiral, according to others. But I'm sort of persuaded to think that it's going to be more of a death spiral for the high-rise development industry with what is done with the local councils. It just basically said, "That's it. We're taking that power away from you, and we're just going to let it rip, Martin. We need 100 new developments, high-rise developments around Sydney, and we got to make it happen. As they say in England, Martin, when the football season starts, here we go, here we go, here we go."
Well, it is pretty amazing. Not unexpected, I think, but it's interesting the distribution of seats, isn't it? Where he's actually turning the wick up on high development. It seems to be most held by the opposition. I wonder why that could be.
Well, it's going to be the interesting thing. There are a couple of interesting factors that have come out of this. And obviously we touched on it a couple of months ago, maybe 2-3 months ago. We touched on who was going to our insiders in the building industry, in the big companies, who they were predicting as to were going to take on the baton. The baton and run with this. And a lot of them are saying it's going to be your second and third tier developers. Now, they're basically the first tier developers. Most of the first tier developers don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole because they're just saying there's no money in it. There's no money in it. Not when it's costing $580,000 per dog box to build, per lot in any development across Sydney on average. And in every other report that you have to produce, and there's an added $20,000 since then to the construction cost for new reports. And so when you start adding that to the cost of the land per lot basis, and the profit margin, say contingency, 5-7% contingency. In other words, stuff ups by the trades along the way, and all the added costs. There's just no money in it. You have to literally buy a 2-bedroom apartment for your $1.2 million, $1.3 million in Parramatta or in Blacktown or in Liverpool for that matter. And that's what's happening. So, but the ones that are going to give it a shot, the chatter in the industry is it's going to be your second and third tier developers, and you know what happens next, right?
Oh yes. Well, it's just worth reflecting on a couple of statistics we're relating to construction. First, of course, is that the insolvency rate's continuing to rise. The trend is well above historic. And that's, of course, because of all the pressures. And the other side of it, of course, is that the construction costs are actually still very, very high. They shot massively up, but they're still rising even now. So, in fact, many people are actually finding that the costs of construction aren't covered by what you can actually get when you've sold the property at the end of the day. So we come back to the same old problem, which is that you've got a number of construction firms who are going to try and build stuff. How do they actually make it cheaper? Well, they skimp. They get cheap materials. They cut corners on the construction side of it. The old self-cert processes are there as well, of course. And then you have problems down the track. And I've had more conversations this past week, again, with people who've bought relatively recently, and they're now discovering all sorts of problems that should have been not there, simply because if it had been built right in the first place, it would have actually not been an issue. So you're laying the foundation here for massive problems down the track. Also, of course, a lot of the high-rise development is going to be close to the railway stations, and that's putting a lot of pressure on people in and around those railway stations. Not least, of course, more traffic, less parking, all of those things. Well, you know, all that's going to flow through too. So this whole chapter of accidents is now setting up for, well, 2025 and 2026 to be the year of more construction disasters and more high-rise disasters, as far as I can see.
100%. This is where they really haven't thought it through. But then again, Martin, because is this how we're not also going to get promised that they're going to raise the Warragamba Dam by an extra meter, and then they'll be able to rezone a lot of Richmond, Windsor, Richmond, all those areas that are 1 in 25 or 1 in 50 to 1 in 100, so that they can subdivide the land, and maybe could it, perhaps they'll even build high rise there, Martin, with 2 and 3 basements, below ground level. But that's the sheer ignorance. You can't even call it ignorance. It's just sheer stupidity of both sides, the left and the right. So this is, and by the way, there's only, my understanding is that there's only two or three companies that can build on an existing dam globally. But who knows? We may engage them and pay billions of dollars and get it done in order to get Minns's wishes through and Alba before the election. But w going back to your high-rise development, apart from the fact that they're going to be shoddy, there's going to be shortcuts, as you said. My biggest concern, and I've been voicing this for since 2020, since 2013, 2014, when I contributed to an article with the ABC and also I think the AFR, and I raised the issue back then of the imported materials from China and other parts of the world that contain basically substances that toxins, chemicals that we basically have zero tolerance. But the materials that are being imported over there, 5%, 10% is normal. It's okay. Now we go back also to the silica in the bench tops. The people are saying, when you question the stone imported the importers of stone, and you say, and you ask them, and you the wholesalers, and you ask them, and you say, well, we're paying a lot more for the new so-called non-silica stone bench tops, but it does is it really non-silica? Is anybody testing it? Because from what we're being told is it's really paper shuffling over in the origins, whether it's Vietnam or whether it's China. So this is what happens over there. So it's just, this is the stuff that happens. This is, I'm not trying to be facetious. I'm not trying to be a bastard about it. This is reality. This is what happens in an environment, a manufacturing environment where you can shuffle papers around and re-stamp other papers, and everything's kosher and nothing gets checked in the ports coming in here, or very little gets checked in the ports coming in here. So going a step even further back to 2013, 2014, I was raising the issue of your 5% asbestos tolerance in the sheets that we're importing. And there's a lot of people that don't realize how much of Sydney of late has been built with imported gyprock sheets. Now, some would say, oh yeah, but we only use Australian products. We borrow this and that, and all this. But hey, 6 months ago, most of our publicly listed companies that were manufacturers of these good gyprock, Villabord, also the suppliers of cement products, and the like, that were being built here. Now they've gone private, they've got resold, and they've got resold to overseas interests. So guess what, Martin? Hey, it's open slather, right? We're not going to know what type of materials are imported, and I think you're going to share something very important with regards to asbestos, and it's really opening up the doors to something that that should we should be keeping a very tight lid on, but unfortunately we're not going to, and it's open slather, Martin. That's the unfortunate thing.
No, very good point, Edwin. Well, of course, it's the 23rd of December, which is the anniversary of Jill's death, my wife. We launched Asbestos Awareness Australia after her death. Well, in fact, she launched it before her death, and it's continued. It's a charity in Australia designed specifically to fight for asbestos-related diseases and, bring more awareness about and more justice about. Jill died from exposure to asbestos. She did a lot of DIY when she was younger, and years later, she got mesothelioma, which is a horrendous disease. And after a lot of treatment, she died. The point about this, Edwin, and it's just worth sort of reflecting, that everybody kept saying asbestos is an old issue. It's going away. It's not going to be, seen. And there were the three waves. The first wave were those who were actually directly exposed during the mining of asbestos, because it's a material that actually lives in the earth. The second was then those in the construction industry who used asbestos materials. The third wave, though, and this is the one that I'm most concerned about, is because it's in the community. It's in buildings, and in fact, about a third of all buildings in Australia still has asbestos in them today. And as you say, we are still bringing into the country fresh asbestos in sheeting that is not checked on the way in and is being used as part of the current construction cycle. So even new buildings potentially have asbestos in it. Now, the point is that the official spin view from the politicians and from the industry is, oh, you need multiple exposures over many, many times to actually get the risk from asbestos up to a high level. That's not true. You can actually expose once with just a few fibers, and those fibers over time, if they don't get out of the body quickly, lodge, and then can create a whole bunch of diseases, and mesothelioma being probably the worst, but other cancers as well. And here is a couple of stark statistics. There are more than 4,000 people each year being diagnosed with asbestos-related diseases, and many of them dying. And the death rate and the exposure rate is rising, not falling. And I'm afraid that the politicians have just completely put their heads, down and put their hands over their ears. They don't want to hear about this. They don't want to talk about it. I've been doing quite a lot of lobbying in the background to try and actually raise awareness. I've basically given up with the politicians. The reason is that the politicians did a deal with the major importer and seller of asbestos materials. And as a result of that, nobody wants to wobble that. And look, people working in the industry can get some support and help if they actually had been exposed. But this is not a historical issue. My problem is, as Edwin, is that we are seeing more asbestos being brought into the country. It's still in the environment, and more people are being exposed. And by the way, there's been a recent case internationally with asbestos turning up in talcum powder and in makeup and other places too. So it's just not a dead issue. It is a live issue. But because of the fact that one third of properties potentially have it within, nobody wants to talk about it, because of course that would actually put a real wobble on property. The other point I'd make, Edwin, and I don't know whether you've come across this, but quite a few of the building surveys that I've seen from people have not actually thought about asbestos at all. And the number of times I've had one-to-one conversations with people, and I've suggested where to look, because it could be wall sheeting, it could be in bathroom and plumbing, but it can be also things in like in floor coverings and in ceiling voids and things like that. Now, these are all things that I think any reputable building surveyor should be able to at least put a warning in. And I've had no end of people over the last couple of years tell me that they've subsequently had a huge issue and a huge cost to get rid of asbestos that should have been picked up in the building survey, but the building survey didn't pick it up. And there are also the weasel words. We can only look at things that are visible. We can't look behind things and under things and around things. So in fact, pretty much without exception, those building surveys are a waste of money unless you get them done by a reputable firm and they actually go into the detail. And this for me is the net new phase of the scandal. So I want to sort of highlight the risks of asbestos. Think asbestos if you're doing any DIY over the Christmas and New Year period. Assume asbestos is there rather than not and get it checked. But more broadly, it links fundamentally back to these building surveyors and this whole scam industry that we've got now, where we've got these people who do very, very superficial surveys, quote unquote, as part of the marketing and selling process of a property without any real intent of picking up any real defects. And that's another huge issue as well.
Oh, it's a major issue, Mark. It's an absolute major issue. There are times where I can tell you now that I personally have had to put some, partially, obviously, bit covered up, and I have to cover up and get a really long nose pliers, and I've gone to get samples without without the owners knowing, but obviously letting the agent know what I'm doing. The selling agent know what I'm doing because they don't give you the time to do the proper checks and balances. But I've done that in order to save clients tens of thousands of dollars, in the future when they do a bathroom renovation, and also, but more to the point, it's not about the tens of thousands of dollars that they could save by doing a bathroom or a bathroom renovation when they find asbestos or in the laundry and in the kitchen areas, but it's more to the point that living through that renovation and that stuff has to be removed, so it's not like it's going to stay intact. Whilst the boys are demolishing the bathrooms, the wet areas, in order to remove the asbestos, because it's really, and some of the way that people remove this stuff is absolutely flabbergasting, left me gobsmacked as to what they do. And look, I've lived through many renovations. Obviously, being very cautious of making sure that the protecting the family from any stress. But living through a renovation is bad enough. Let alone thinking about the fact that people are coming in to remove asbestos from your bathrooms, or your wet areas, your laundry, and even your kitchen areas. It's pretty bad. And quite frankly, we don't have the highest standards in when it comes to renovations as in many other parts of the world, such as America and Canada, when they have to remove asbestos from homes, they literally cocoon the house. They're really ahead of the times. But do you remember that video that we showed our viewers where they're bloody well cutting Hebel blocks in the middle of Carlingford food court, they're all exposed. I mean, it's not okay, it's not asbestos, but it's still silicone, still floating around the food court. So, you go up to the kebab shop and you say, "Oh, look, can I have a kebab with a bit of chili sauce and a bit of hummus?" And then the kebab shop owner says, "Oh, would you like some silica with it as well?" And you say, "Oh, no, thanks." But you say, "Well, too bad, you're going to get it anyway. Because the shit's floating around everywhere." So, or you can get some fish and chips, and they ask you, "Do you want some chicken salt on the chips?" And you go, no, thanks. The silica dust that just landed on there—that's salty enough as it is." So, this is the sort of stuff that when you're doing renovations, when you're doing make good, in commercial premises. When you're returning, or even fitting it out, we really don't take a lot of care to that. The scary thing moving forward, Mike, for me is all the DIY renovations that many are going to do, because that is where we're going to be moving more and more into in 2025, in 2026 because of the lack of construction, lack of housing, proper housing. And when I talk about housing, I'm talking about freestanding homes. People are going to put extensions, makeshift extensions. They're going to convert garages into temporary accommodation. And this is the scary this is the scary part, Martin. This is the scary thing that people don't realize what they're taking on. And as you said, it's really bizarre that you don't get the time to really do your due diligence, or not given the proper and adequate time to do proper due diligence when it comes to looking at the integrity of a property. Or many people don't know what to do. They don't know how to do it. They don't know how to expedite that process. And this is where they come unstuck. And then they have to, then they end up spending tens and tens of thousands of dollars removing the cladding, that the old homes are being shit on. And but the other thing is, we're not talking about homes that were worth $350, $400, $500, $600. I mean, we're talking about, $2 million homes, like the one that we showed last week with regards to the termite. I mean, that's an old fibro house. The whole thing is covered in asbestos from ground to your eaves. If the previous video that you showed last week, people can see where those timbers are resting on, and the asbestos sheeting there, it's right in your face. So people are living under these conditions. People continue to live under these, and I believe that things are going to get worse, unfortunately.
No, I think that's right, Edwin. And it's just worth reflecting, and I'll put this back up again. The Asbestos Awareness site has a lot of information about asbestos. And we talk in this particular site, and check out the videos on that site as well, Asbestos Awareness Australia, about the 27 different manifestations of asbestos, because you can find it in all sorts of different places. It's not just in the obvious places. Not just roof sheeting. And the other factor, just to bear in mind, Edwin, is that people say, well, as long as you don't disturb it, then it's fine. But it's not, because over time, asbestos deteriorates. Your example of it actually in the wall space, and the structural support had gone because of other things, and suddenly it's all flapping around. The point is, over time, the asbestos can release fibers. You only need a few fibers. And the point, of course, here is that the delay between being exposed and potentially getting really, really sick is 10, 15, 20, 30, even 40 years. So there's a long tail on this. And that's part of the problem in Jill's case. She did a lot of DIYs in her 30s and she died in her 60s. The other point is that all the research is now showing that the wave three, the DIY related exposure, is rising, as I said, but it's females who seem particularly prone to getting in exposed and ultimately getting mesothelioma and other cancer-related diseases. Now, whether that's something to do with the work that they've done, the way they've done it, or whether it's to do with the fact that there's some genetic disposition, I don't know. Nobody knows, because the research isn't being done even internationally. I've been talking to a number of international researching companies who are still looking at asbestos, but nobody really wants to get into the detail here. Nobody wants to admit how big this problem is. And what I've said, I made a show the other day called The shadow of asbestos still haunts. And that's really the point, that this is actually a shadow that's casting a long, long reach over many generations, over many properties. And the bottom line is this: you've got to assume, if you're doing any DIY, that if you are looking at any property, you've got to ask the question, is there asbestos present? And that, maybe you should assume there is asbestos present until you can prove there isn't, rather than the other, which is, oh, she'll be right. That was unfortunately Jill's attitude. She's like, well, I'm young, I'll be fine. Well, no, unfortunately, it caught up with her. So we'll continue the fight for asbestos awareness. And more broadly, I think this is a really, really important warning at this time of year. If you're doing DIY, think asbestos. If you're thinking about buying a property, think asbestos. And if you're thinking of building a new property, or indeed getting somebody to build the new property, ask some serious questions specifically about the sheeting. Has it come imported from China? Remember, China allows asbestos to be incorporated in the sheeting, no problem. And by the way, building with asbestos is not illegal in the US either at the moment. So it's still a big, big, big issue. And I just, you know, we'll keep the fight up because it's critical in the memory of Jill. But this is a really important warning this time of year.
100%, mate. And just to in closing with a couple of other areas that people don't think about, to our WeChat chatter of viewers, obviously a lot of WeChat chatterers themselves don't know that some of the jade that they're wearing around their necks contains asbestos as well, and they're breathing it in, and that those fibers are released with the with the chemicals that the body, from their sweat and everything, and that breaks the jade down, and then those fibers are released, and you're breathing that in, which is an interesting thing that I learned over the last couple of years. And the other thing that people have to be very extra careful about is something that is overlooked in the old apartment blocks. 50% of the vermiculite that was used to as a fire retardant in between the floors, which is that a lot of people call it that popcorn ceiling look. 50% of that contains asbestos. Now people say, oh well, yeah, but it's in the ceiling, it's painted, it'll be okay. Well, look, think about it. That's where that's where a lot of the little bugs that enter your home end up living in, and they scratch into those areas. Number one. Number two. When electricians are changing light bulbs, light fittings, they're going to disturb those areas, and that dust is going to float all over the apartment complex, the unit, and also when you're getting upgrades, to put ceiling fans on, you've got those issues. But more to the point is the common areas. If it's in your apartment, it's going to be 100%. It's going to be in the common areas, because that those popcorn ceilings and throughout the stairwells, throughout the all the landing areas, and this is where a lot of the work gets done. Where bring the unit block up to speed with the fire ordinances and smoke detectors, smoke alarms, and again upgrades to lighting, cameras, whatever it is. So people are drilling, so they're disturbing all these areas, and that dust is floating around. And look, you might it's a toss of a coin. 50% may be affected, but the question is which 50%, right?
Well, that's the point. It's a lottery. So you've got to be conservative in your assumptions with regard to asbestos and the asbestos exposure. And like I said, it's in places you wouldn't expect. It's still in brake pads in some places. It's still actually used in some other engineering contexts as well. But in the home context, there are 27 different instances where you might find asbestos. So check out the asbestos awareness site. Let's move on, Edwin, because we should also talk about cats.
Yeah, look, this is a feel-good story of WeChat chatterers. Dusty and Evan said, you got to share this. You got to share the feel-good stories. What it is we know that the Chinese economy is absolutely cactus, and small businesses are suffering big time throughout all the first-tier and second-tier cities and third-tier cities across China. So it's nothing new, but the feel-good story is that this particular fellow, he owns a this was on WeChat, by the way. He owns three tile showrooms. He owns a tile company, and he's got three showrooms. Can't remember the name of the city. I don't think it was Guangzhou. It's another city. I just can't remember the name of it. And because he loves cats, he noticed that his local cat cafe, because over there they've got cat cafes, dog cafes, they've got all sorts of cafes. They don't eat them, but of course the cats are free to roam around and keep the patrons company. And also pet stores that were closing down, and rather than leaving these cats abandoned, what he did was he turned one of his showrooms into in it's still a tile showroom, but it's also housing hundreds and hundreds of cats. So you can go and buy tiles. You can go and buy, 20, 30, 40 square meters of tiles, and you can take a cat home with you. So it's got to be a feel-good story. It's out of adversity, you do get some good stories. You get some, people that are that love our furry friends, and yeah. So that's what's happening. Outside of that, the WeChat chatters here in Sydney are pretty much quiet. They've just sort of taken a rest for the end of year, and waiting until mid-January before they start really making the noise. Yeah, so that's what Dusty and Evan wanted me to share, Martin.
Well, very good. Well, we shouldn't talk about cats for too long or too loud because it might wake the dogs up. They're asleep at the minute. They get very excited when they see cats because, of course, they're quite used to furry animals like possums and things up trees and what have you. So when they see cats, they get very, very excited. But no, very good. Interesting little story there. I guess we should progress the conversation also on, because the other thing that's really worth just reflecting on is Australia's future population growth. And I don't know whether you saw this, but there was this report that came out this week that the population is on track to hit 31.3 million. Surge of immigration swelling Australia's population is being offset by falling numbers of babies. The natural increase is only 104,000. But, net overseas migration is extremely, extremely strong. And of course, that's policy. So that's essentially creating all sorts of issues. Just to sort of build on that a little bit, it's worth just noting, of course, that that's put a huge pressure on accommodation, a lot of demand, a lot of people paying a lot more for rents. There was a report that came out that rents are much higher than a year ago, thousands of dollars more per annum being paid. I also made a show yesterday making the point that they're actually destroying some of the tent cities in and around Brisbane, for example, but that doesn't solve the housing problem. It just sort of moves the people on, but doesn't actually really solve anything at all. And with high migration, that's a big deal. But then, of course, just to build on the migration story a little bit further, when you start peeling the onion and saying, well, so what, who's coming and where they're coming from? This is Matt Barry's observation: the international students hit a record, what's more than 1 million enrollments to September 24. The unis are out of control, and there are lots of questions about accreditation and the vets and the other things there. So this is a huge deal.
It's a big deal, with the way we're going with population growth. And obviously next week we're going to talk about some of my predictions with going into 2025, and obviously that's going to play a big part as to what I'm going to be predicting for 2025 with regards to property prices and the markets in the Sydney areas. But well, one of the things, Martin, though, I really feel that we're a little bit distracted at the moment. We're a little bit distracted from what with the what with the student visa story. I mean, it's a valid story. It's an important story, but we seem to have hinged everything on that. When in actual fact, there are many other ways in which the governments are going to be releasing and going to and have already started releasing. As I said, change the name of the visa, change the number of the visa. It's smoke and mirrors. Don't watch what I'm not doing here, or watch what I'm doing saying over here. But don't watch the left hand. What it does, it's those sleight of hand tricks, because as I said, they change the names of the visas and they change the numbers of the visas, and we end up with the same tally at the end of the day. But when you start focusing just on the students, and people start realizing, people start not realizing what's really happening out there, and this is where again one of my very going to be one of my very strong points next week, and is why I say that 2025 is going to be the year of the Silent Tigers. This is when the Silent Tigers are going to roar, and I'll talk more about that next week. And a lot of it obviously has to do with the pathways, the many pathways that have been opened. If you recall, old mate Perrottet went over there to literally start the ball rolling. It wasn't Minns, it wasn't Albo, it was our avid follower Perrottet that he lost it, and he lost it on that, I believe.
Yeah, good point. Well, this will be a really interesting conversation to take up next week. We're going to do a live show next Monday. It'll be at the 8 p.m. slot rather than our normal recording time of 6 p.m. So give people a chance to pile in on live and ask you questions, but also get your thoughts about the next year. You made some predictions a year ago, most of which seem to have come true one way or another, worryingly. So it'll be interesting to see what you think there. But just in terms of do we have adults in the room is the question. And I'm actually made a show called Wanted: Adults in the Budget Room as Deficits Roar and Games Are Played. If you look through the MyEFO, which was released last week, there were so many games being played with stuff that was outside the budget but was big expenditure, with some assumptions that were heroic and others that were actually deliberately conservative. And my net conclusion from this was that really we can't take much seriously about what's being said at the moment. The economy is clearly in a difficult position, and I think it's going to become more difficult. And just to give people a bit of a sense as to, well, in comparison, New Zealand is actually back in recession again. And the fact of the matter is that New Zealand's put rates up higher. They've dialed rates back. They've dialed back migration. And the economy is in recession in New Zealand, two negative quarters of GDP. And that's very significant. But as Tarek actually put out in a post, if it has not been for government spending, Australia's economy would have contracted in three out of the last three quarters. This is the longest run of the economy contracting ex-government spending since the 82-83 recession. Without high migration, it would have contracted in five out of the last six. So his point, and I think it's a very important point, is that Australia's economy is teetering on the edge, but it's really the high migration that's the thing that's just sort of propping it up slightly. But of course, in real terms, GDP per capita will continue to go backwards. And the result of all of this is that I think 2025 is going to be a bit of a wobbly year for many people. So this is a really important point to really understand the consequence of bad policy over 20 to 30 years. It's all coming home to roost now. And of course, we're starting to see the other little signs of property weakness in some areas. Now, I always make the point that property weakness is a matter of where you look. So, you had slides like this one, Fixer Upper wins trophy home race. So, of course, at the luxury end of the property, it was a good year. Well, was it really? But then this one, that streets ahead, mid-sized capital city suburbs surge with million-dollar club. So they're trying to sort of talk it up there. Although actually, if you look carefully, it's not uniform. And then, of course, you have this sort of stuff which says, well, actually, there are some property owners who are selling at a loss. For example, loss-making sales, an average in Parramatta, down 22.8% or about there. This is based on CoreLogic. You can see some of the numbers. Now, my point is, there's a lot of rubbish being written, a lot of rubbish being spoken, but we need to understand the consequences and implications of this massive high migration against the poor supply of property that we just touched on earlier on. And that's why I think that 2025 is going to be a really interesting year, but also quite concerning year.
Yeah, look, it is, it will be. There are a lot of factors that are going to be at play. It will continue to be at play, And the interesting one that's going to be that we're going to have to keep a very close eye on is going to be the new board. That's not going to be influenced. That's not going to make an influence or an impact on the judgment of the by the RBA. So it's going to be really, really interesting. But as I said, if we paint Sydney with one brush, it's like saying that an itch that you get is the same. An itch is just a symptom. It depends where the itch is. If it's around your nose, if it's around your ears, it could be eczema. If it's in the backside, it could be piles. If it's in the groin area, who knows where you've been, what massage parlor you've been attending. So it depends on where the itch is. So, but that's the unfortunate thing. This is why people have got to be very, very careful when they move forward into 2025, as I say, because and look, obviously we have to look at these things for the sake of our clients that are both preparing to sell the homes and also those that are have commissioned us to help them to buy properties and to help them make the better judgments and better decisions. Because there are a lot of factors at play, and not every suburb is going to move in the same direction as others, or at the same speed. And it comes back to many things, cost of construction, cost of renovation, what type of property, schooling, religious places of worship, and the list goes on and on and on. But yeah, but if you if you know, not every inch is what you think it is. So that's the point, right?
Well, that's right. Yes, I feel itches everywhere now. But I tell you what, there's another itch that we should just touch on briefly, and that's this one. Of course, has the Fed reached the neutral setting? Of course, the Fed last week didn't do what people expected, so they put rates up, but then said, "Well, maybe." Sorry, put rates down, but then actually said, "Well, maybe we're not going to cut rates much next year." And the question is now, where is that neutral rate of interest? Could it be that we've already been close to it? And has the era of very low rates ended? And I think probably the answer is so. Anybody who's holding out for significant rate cuts, either in Australia or in the US next year, might be disappointed. And Christopher Joy's article sort of followed on from that, saying, well, the hawkish pivot, which is what it was, they cut rates, but also pivoted towards less cuts next year, could well be toxic for stocks. We'll see. Stocks slipped significantly last year. They bumped back higher in Australia on Monday on low volumes. So there's a lot to play for here in terms of some of those international contexts. But coming back to your point that granularity, going to look at individual locations and individual types of property is the only thing to do, because these high-level trends and these high-level theories about what's going on are missing so much of the obvious. And the truth is that there are still areas in Sydney and other places where prices are still rising. There are other areas where prices are falling, and you can sort of dwell on this at an aggregate level, and you get a meaningless answer. But when you actually look at the individual properties in individual locations and do the due diligence, you can still find there are some that are quite good value. There are lots that are very bad value. And so caution is very important. And then if you overlay what we said earlier on about defects and the surveys not necessarily showing the defects and factoring that in as well, I think the big take for me from this last year, and I've had a number of one-to-one conversations through the year, is how many people who've bought property have actually felt deceived at the end of the process. And they felt deceived because of what the agents did or didn't do, what the building surveyor did or didn't do, what they subsequently found about the property. And, in retrospect, in some cases, they've paid a lot more than they should have paid. In other cases, they've been relatively happy with the decision. So you've got this massive spread between those who feel comfortable about what's happening with the property that they bought, but also buyer's remorse. So the people who are feeling that they've actually made really bad decisions, and they know they've made bad decisions, and now trying to recover from that position. And unfortunately, if I sort of look across the spectrum, and okay, this is a self-selecting sample, because if you're going to be fine, you probably won't talk to me. But I've had more people this year who've ended up with buyer's remorse and massive regrets about what they bought, rather than those who actually think they've done really well by the transaction. So I think that's a bit of a warning.
Look, it is. And only today, I just heard a story of a couple in the Northern Beaches that bought a property up there, and now they've realised that the property had termites, and they're going to be spending over $100,000 in rectifying the deck. And along with it comes some subsidence as well, what wasn't picked up in the building report, and they've got to build a bloody retaining wall. One part is about 3 meters high. This is the things that people don't realize. The funny thing is, Martin, you can go to a Mercedes dealer, you can go to a BMW dealer, you can go to many dealers, and you can say, listen, I want to buy a $200,000 vehicle, I want to buy $250, even $150, even $100, and you could say, but look, this is you could take it away for the weekend. And you could take it away for the weekend, and you could drive it. You could thrash the hell out of it. You could do wheelies. You could do spin outs. You could do donuts. You could do whatever you want. Yeah, you put it through the paces. Yeah, you take it to Oran Park. Well, yeah, wherever or back the back streets of where we used to go as we were growing up, back the back streets of Smithfield. You can't take it to Homebush anymore because there's nowhere to race there. But you just take it to the back of Smithfield and put it through its paces. But yet you've got to make a decision on a $2 million property almost right there on the spot, and the selling agent and the vendor give you the building report that's tell you, oh yeah, everything's good, everything's hunky-dory, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more. So seriously, this is effed up, Martin. This is really effed up. So what's wrong with this picture? So and this is why this, and I can also assure you that there's probably 10 times more people, 100 times more people that have that know of our show, that know of our program, that know of yourself, if you heard of 50 people that have had buyer's remorse in 2024 in buying a property after they've chatted to you about, I bet you there's another 500 out there just holding their breath.
Well, interestingly, some people don't want to admit it. So I've been having a couple of conversations where a couple have sort of come on and spoken to me, and one of the two parties is really concerned. The other one is saying, oh, well, we don't really want to talk about this. We prefer not to admit that we've made a mistake. And I think there's a lot of that out there. The other point, of course, is that buyer's remorse comes slowly sometimes, so you might not realize it on day one, but after the first year or two. I've got this theory though that the way to solve this would be for a prospective vendor to effectively offer bed and breakfast, or come and live with us in the property for 24 hours, try before you buy. Now that would be quite an interesting way, wouldn't it?
Yeah, why not? I mean, no, but look, I really believe that people that rely on these building reports, before you buy building reports, that they look. I'm sorry, but if you're going to rely on everything that the selling agent tells you, if you believe that the selling agent is on your side, well, you're a dipstick to start off with. That's it. I'm sorry, but you're already behind the eight ball, and this is where a lot of people get caught out. And I've been saying for how long? It's not the rectification work is not thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're talking $200,000, $300,000 in rectification work after you've paid top dollar for something that the agent said, oh yeah, it was done, it was renovated, and it's great, and they use the best of the best and blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Here's the building report, and next thing the house is about to go off a cliff. This is this is what you get when you rely on people have got to realize more and more. Look, I'm this close, Martin. I'm this close to launching a to launching a what's the word? That platform. I
GoFundMe.
still, yeah, a GoFundMe page to help people chase down building inspectors that have done shoddy reports.
Yeah, well, we need to do something because at the moment there's very little protection. The quality of those reports are horrendously bad. And of course, they've got all the small print, the weasel words. They say, well, we couldn't look behind this, we couldn't do that, you know, and it's only as we see it, etc., etc. We discussed the other day, how long does it take to do one of those reports? You know, just a few moments. When I was a building surveyor, I would spend between 2 and 3 hours on a property generally to do a full structural survey and to understand what was going on with it. And sometimes even more than that if it was a big and complicated property. So these things are really, really important. Well, let's just quickly look at the numbers. Now, of course, the numbers really are relatively meaningless at the time of the year, Edwin. But, you know, if you look at the listings based on domain, on the 16th, there were 17,273 properties listed for sale in the Greater Sydney region based on domain. The 23rd, 16,012. Well, that's what you'd expect, that things are actually easing back. And the chart shows that quite nicely. But there is a little interesting observation about the land. So the number of land packages that are up on the market has gone up.
It has been consistent. At the beginning of the year, I think we were only just over 1,000, and now we're close to 1,800, and that's been consistently growing. And this is, there's the push to build, but nobody really wants to build. It's just too costly to build. And would you really take a punt on that unless you're prepared to pay big dollars to, and you've got assurances and guarantees that the builder isn't going to go belly up, knowing from HIA the insider telling us that 50%, 51 or 57% of first-tier builders are trading insolvent. Crazy stuff, Martin.
Absolutely.
Absolutely crazy stuff.
Well, here's a little chart that just is relevant for that. This is the Australian new detached house sales data from the HIA. And it's interesting how when they change the National Construction Code, it pulls a bit of activity forward and then it sort of eases off again. So that may be another another reason to think about this, that sometimes when people change the game, you know, people in the construction sector react. But generally, my observation is simply this, that the number of people in the building and construction sector who are trading well and comfortably seems to be getting more and more squeezed. And that's because of the costs. We discussed that earlier, and the fact that you know, cash flow is a real problem. Things are being more expensive. So costs of building materials are still rising, even if they're rising at slightly lower pace. But the labor costs is the critical thing. The labor costs are still massive, and that's putting a lot of pressure on a lot of projects. And again, I've had the chance to speak with a few people who've got this idea to, I've got this land, I'm going to try and build a property on it. And then you actually sit down with them and work out what it would cost to build, what it would actually translate to in terms of the value once it was built. And there's a gap. And that gap is on the wrong side of the equation. In other words, if you were actually to build now, you would be spending more to build than actually the value of the property if it was built. Well, that is stupid, and you're not going to build in that situation. And an interesting question, really, Edwin, is at what point might that turn around? I'm not sure it will turn around anytime soon, given where we are with the construction industry.
No, not at all. And there's a current client that we've been advising, and they were going to they were going to detonate and rebuild, but I've since talked them into gutting it using the existing footprint and going up for various reasons because of the setback changes since the original house was built. So you're not going to get your setbacks are going to be a lot greater. So there's going to be less of a footprint that you can build on. The fact that parts of the area where this property is close to It's close to a national park, so the rezoning from in his particular position where their land envelope sits, it's gone from from about 40 to FZ, which is even worse. So there's going to be a lot more restrictions as to what you can build and how you can build, and it's going to be a lot more costly to build. So yeah, look, these are the points where well we've shared many a while back. I think 2.5 years ago, two and a half, 3 years ago, we were talking about the intrinsic value of existing dwellings as opposed to detonating and rebuilding. Whereas, you could comfortably say, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, existing dwellings were worth a lot less than what they are worth now. For that reason, because of the cost of construction. So if you can renovate and extend, you're way ahead of the curve, then detonating and rebuilding and then going through all that. My sister's going through that at the moment, and it's taken her over a year and a half to get her approvals. And the bloody builder that she used, well, she's a bit of a dipstick herself, but peas in the pod, peas in the pod. He got her to demolish the house before he had the CC, and she had to go and rent for an extra 6 months or so. Crazy stuff. But then look, that's what happened. That's why you can't allow emotion. You can't allow emotion you need to get somebody to, take you to the corner, slap you a couple of times, and then reset at the table and re-pan out what you're going to do.
Well, and of course, if you are doing renovations, then that to discussion later on about asbestos really comes back into vogue, right? Because the chances are that there's going to be dust, and if that dust includes asbestos, there's a risk. So all of those things need to be taken on board. Now, let's just look at Melbourne briefly. So on the 16th, there were 28, 282 properties listed, again, houses being the bulk of it. And then 23rd, 27, 192, so a slight fall. If we look at Brisbane on the 16th, 3,580, and then 3,260 on the 23rd, so a further small fall. Looking at the auctions, doesn't really tell you much. I mean, basically, there's not going to be much happening over the next 2 weeks or so. It'd be interesting to see what happens as the markets pick up after the break, but it's going to be quiet for the immediate short term. Although, interestingly, Edwin, I'm still seeing a few people negotiating ahead of auctions and still trying to actually cut off an auction at the pass. So that's quite an interesting little observation.
Yeah, look, it is, and it's a good strategy as well because of the sentiment. Again, because, look, people, as I keep on saying over and over and over and over and over and over again, it's people are more emotional about selling, and they're also more emotional about buying than they are logical. And you got to play on that. You got to play on that. You got to play on it. So you play on it right now. You play on it right now, and because the vendors are going to be very emotional. The agents are, look, they're desperate. They're desperate for a deal because Christmas is only 2 days away, right? Or is it a day? I don't know. 2 days, something like that. Santa Claus depends whether or not he got stuck over in Russia or Ukraine. Who knows? Or he got shot down by the UFOs over America. Who knows whether he'll even get to Australia? But look, the interesting thing for me about the auctions, Martin, is the fact that there's only one auction on the 28th coming up, and that's in Melbourne. What happened to the Sydney Knights? What happened to our auction stamina? What happened to the let's get out there, the Tom Panos index? I mean, it's let me down, boys, let me down. The others, are we? There's no. Are we men with cojones, or are we just it just passes by? I don't know. I was going to say something else, but then again, you might have been
Phew, glad you didn't. Let's
deplatformed.
just briefly look at the rentals. On the 16th, this is for Sydney, 14,827. On the 23rd, 13,265 in Melbourne. 12,766 on the 16th, and 11,793 on the 23rd. So it's a pretty consistent pattern. And just before I come across to you to your final tip of the year, I just want to give you a quick update on my roof. My roof is complete. I'm pleased to say I've now got a new roof that is keeping the heat in nicely and keeping the water out, which is good. But interestingly, in the UK, the roof had to be recertified by the local city council. So we actually had to have somebody come round at the end of it, and he wandered around and looked at it to make sure that the quality of the work was appropriate and adequate. And I will get a certificate. So as well as a 10-year guarantee from the builder, I get a certificate from the council to say that the work has been done to appropriate standards. And he came actually around during the process as well, so that he could see what was going on underneath before he finished off. So to me, that's a really interesting observation as how things should be.
Yeah, look, 100%. But the question is, Martin, is if it wasn't up to standard, would you have applied? Would you have sent a memo to the White House and got Biden to pardon the builders, the roofers? Because I hear that Biden's throwing out pardons left, right, and center.
Yeah, very, very, very good point. Well, luckily I had a really, really good local reputable builder. And by the way, this was a guy that I've known for quite some time. He's got a really good reputation in the location. He doesn't ever advertise. He doesn't need to, because it's all done by word of recommendation. And he works in a relatively small area, so he can point to all the places that he's fixed, and has got a massively good reputation. And you have to wait for him sometimes to sort of find a slot, because he's just so busy. But it's a really interesting thing. What I find quite fascinating also is that I had a few people ask me who the builder was because of the quality of the work. So even from a distance, people could see that the quality of work was so great. So it's fascinating. Good work follows good work.
And it's not because you painted the Aussie flag on your roof.
Ah, maybe that was it.
I think the story that needs to the I think the story that needs to be really told there, Martin, is the fact that you bought that property whilst you were here in Australia. I know you viewed it or you walked past it. Where you and you walked past it when you were you're perusing the lands of your forefathers, and but. But you bought it when you were here. You didn't rely on the agent's building inspection report. You did your own building inspection. You commissioned your own and you paid for it whilst you were living here. On that building inspection report, you negotiated the price down to the equivalent value of an extra, obviously, from others, but one of them, from memory, from what you were telling me back then, was you negotiated down quite a fair bit down because both. The vendor was made aware of the condition of the roof, the poor condition of the roof structure. You were obviously made aware. You used that as a bargaining chip to bring the price down, right? All because you did your due diligence. Now, the big upshot to this was that a big branch landed on your roof, and you were covered with insurance. So you had a second win because you had insurance over the building. Now you've got a better roof. You've got a house at a cheaper price. You've got a better roof because now you've got sacking and other insulation there and a lot of aluminium foil to keep the UFOs away. So yeah, you're on a win-win-win situation there. But sadly, for most of the buyers, for a lot of the buyers in the Sydney markets that we see, and those that get emotional, that's not the, it's tears, tears, and more tears.
Well, I think it just shows you, if you're methodical about it and you think it through and you do the right things in the right order and take the right steps, you can protect yourself. You can end up buying at the right point, and I've ended up ahead. I've ended up with a warmer house, waterproof, completely waterproof house with a better roof than I had previously, and I was a winner. Unfortunately, there were lots of losers, as we said earlier on. Edwin, as we come to the end of the show, we should wish everybody a very peaceful Christmas New Year period. Happy holidays, and catch up with friends and family. Do stay safe. We will be back for our end of year show next Monday, the 30th at 8 p.m. Sydney time. That'll be a live show, so you can join us in the chat, ask questions, and share your thoughts about property and those sorts of things. We'll get Edwin's thoughts for 2025, and we might review some of his 2024 predictions. And I want to say, Edwin, thank you very much for spending these Monday evenings with us through the year. It's been amazing, the things we covered and some of the issues that we highlighted ahead of time, and then they've popped out for everybody else to see. So I shall look forward to the last show of the year, and I shall look forward to 2025 as well.
Looking forward to it, Martin. All the very best. You stay safe as well over the Christmas break there. And all the very best to you. And I know it's going to be a little bit quieter. Also, the unfortunate, but the good, great memories of Jill, we'll all be thinking of her over the next couple of days as well. Take care, Martin, and stay safe.
Yeah, thanks, Edwin. Well, you know, the Asbestos Awareness Australia site is up. Check it out if you've got time. There's some great, great videos there that we did. And, folks, over this Christmas and New Year period, have a good time, but also think asbestos. See you, Edwin. Take care.